This mini-lecture for English 206 is focused on Beowulf, the oldest epic poem in the English language and the work that's often seen as the first major monument of English literature. What does it mean for this to be English, and what does it mean for it to be a poem? I want to spend some time thinking about both those questions. First of all, I'll just point out that Beowulf is in Old English. This is a term that gets thrown around a lot. It's applied to Shakespeare, it's applied to Chaucer. Old English, from a linguistic standpoint, is a category that only exists in Britain between about the 6th century, the 500s, going up to the mid-9th century. And the reason why it stops then is because of the Norman invasion. When William the Conqueror comes over with his Norman French, the language starts to evolve, and that brings about what is known as Middle English, which Chaucer wrote in, the Sir Gawain poet wrote in, and we'll talk in the next lecture about where English goes from there. But so there's a very specific language at a very specific moment being used in this poem. And in fact, it's closest related to Dutch out of any of the modern languages. It sounds like German when you read it out loud. There are words you can recognize as English, but the grammar is very, very different. The verse is also very different. Old English poetry is alliterative, meaning that it tends to match initial sounds of words, and usually across a line, not across multiple lines. There is no rhyme in Old English verse, and the poetic line is defined by the number of stresses, not the number of syllables. Both rhyme and the current form of meter that we're used to, what's referred to as accentual syllabic meter, where you count the number of stresses and the number of syllables, those both come in with the Normans into Middle English. So those devices are not generally seen in Old English works, including short lyric poems in addition to Beowulf. So what's English about this poem? Well, it's a little bit hard to say when we're first looking at the story, because it's a story about a Geat. Beowulf is from Geatland, which is in the south of what is now Sweden. He goes across the North Sea to Denmark, what is referred to as Daneland, to rescue the kingdom there before going back home and becoming king of Geatland, where he lives out the rest of his life. England is never mentioned, England is never encountered in this poem. So how this counts as an English poem is a little bit tough to tell. And in fact, the way that people have generally treated this poem has been to try to figure out how it relates the larger history of Scandinavia and perhaps places Britain within that larger history, how it fits in terms of the history of language. People analyze the words, the patterns, the grammar structure, all these kinds of things in a field known as philology, today more often referred to as historical linguistics. And that is the way that in its modern form Beowulf has, or at least in its modern history, Beowulf has been treated. The work has survived in only one manuscript poem that was discovered in an abbey after the abbeys were closed by Henry VIII during the English Reformation. It was saved for historical purposes because it happened to be bound with a work of early British history. And it survived a fire in the country house that it was kept in, Robert Cotton's library, and eventually this wound up in the British Library where the manuscript is today. It wasn't available in print until the late 1820s. It wasn't available in translation until about 10 years after that. So it wasn't available to most of the Romantic writers, to many of the others who were engaging medieval topics in the early part of the 19th century. But one thing that probably would not have occurred to them at the time was to treat Beowulf as a poem, and this is because the historical and the linguistic elements controlled what people thought Beowulf was good for as late as the 1930s. In fact, it took until 1936 for none other than J.R.R. Tolkien, today famous for writing The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, but also one of the most important scholars of Old English as well as Middle English in the 20th century. 1936, he writes an essay called Beowulf, the Monsters, and the Critics. And his essential argument is that the people who insist on mining the poem for historical or linguistic information about who was King Hygelac and, you know, how did this particular verb form evolve and all these kinds of things, we're missing the point that this was a poem about some of the great ideas and emotions in human nature. And the clashes with the monsters were what he saw as the flashpoints for this. He understood Beowulf as a written poem. There's still an ongoing controversy how much of this comes from oral tradition and how much comes from somebody actually sitting down and crafting this on paper, or at least parchment. While that debate is still going, Tolkien was the person who really created the idea that we should read Beowulf as literature, as a poem. In fact, I'd like to read a couple of quotations from his essay that give a little bit of a sense of how he himself imagined this. We might see a little bit of his own working on Middle-earth in how he imagined the Beowulf poet doing what he did. At one moment in his essay, Tolkien imagines a kind of allegory or parable of what has happened to Beowulf over the course of its history, and particularly its reception. A man inherited a field in which was an accumulation of old stone, part of an older hall. Of the old stone, some had already been used in building the house in which he actually lived, not far from the old house of his fathers. Of the rest, he took some and built a tower. But his friends coming perceived at once, without troubling to climb the steps, that these stones had formerly belonged to a more ancient building. So they pushed the tower over, with no little labor, in order to look for hidden carvings and inscriptions, or to discover whence the man's distant forefathers had obtained their building material. Some, suspecting a deposit of coal under the soil, began to dig for it, and forgot even the stones. They all said, "This tower is most interesting." But they also said, after pushing it over, "What a muddle it is in." And even the man's own descendants, who might have been expected to consider what he had been about, were heard to murmur, "He is such an odd fellow. Imagine his using these old stones just to build a nonsensical tower. Why did not he restore the old house? He had no sense of proportion." But from the top of that tower, the man had been able to look out upon the sea. So what Tolkien is getting at is focusing on the raw materials of Beowulf, focusing on the different pieces that it's made of, the ground that it rests on, misses the fact that this tower was built that gave new views that are only possible by climbing the tower, by going up into the poem and letting it take you where it's going to take you. This is a very romantic notion of poetry, but it's one that Tolkien is using to push against the extremely anti-romantic treatment that this poem had experienced up until this point. And Tolkien was so successful that by the time Seamus Heaney turned his hand to translate Beowulf around the year 2000, Beowulf was very staunchly at the center of the English canon, very much a poem. And in fact, a poem that had been translated by many famous poets up until this point. For Seamus Heaney, this was something of a crowning achievement in his career. He had recently won the Nobel Prize in Literature for his poetry about the Irish struggles for gaining independence, for trying to find their own way following the winning of independence in the 1920s, and to find their way particularly through the world dominated by English. And this is one of the big problems for an Irish poet that Seamus Heaney decided to take head on. The alliterative tradition that Beowulf is written in is anathema to many Irish poets. Many Irish poets will not write in alliterative forms because they associate it with Anglo-Saxon and thus with the language of the oppressor. This is exactly what we want to get away from, according to many poets from Ireland. Seamus Heaney, as a poet from Ireland, decided that he was going to embrace the oppressor's language and to find a way to make it his own. So one thing that he winds up doing with this poem is that he finds certain Irish or even sometimes Scottish Gaelic words to translate Anglo-Saxon. In fact, one word that he became particularly interested in was a verb tholion, which shows up early on, talking about the people suffering and that God knew what the people suffered and so sent them a hero. This is not, in fact, Beowulf, but one of the ancestors of Hrothgar, the king of the Danes, but setting up the tone for Beowulf's own heroism. When Hini translates that verb tholion, he translates it as tholed. He knew what they had tholed. That's actually an Irish term. That's one you won't really hear outside of the island of Ireland, but he puts it into the mouth of an Anglo-Saxon narrator. This is one of his ways of coming to terms with this poem as a poem of the displaced, as a poem of the people who have been overrun by others. We generally think of the Angles and the Saxons as conquerors, but this particular story is actually a story of the conquered, of the Danes trying to keep their country from being overrun by enemies from the edge, such as Grendel, from the marches. Back in Geatland, Beowulf's main challenge is to keep his country from being overrun, and this is one of the things that people in his country most fear when he dies, is that they will now not be able to resist the Swedes from the north, or the Frisians, or some of the other peoples who have threatened to invade the borders of their kingdom. So the Irish poet finally finds something very, very familiar in this Anglo-Saxon poem. It's a poem of the colonized. It's a poem of the people whose culture, whose way of life, whose country has been overrun by someone else, and who always live with the threat and the shadow of that being overrun. So by the time we get to Beowulf, reading it in this class in Heaney's translation, this has gone from being an Anglo-Saxon poem to being a historical and linguistic curiosity to being a poem that speaks to the world condition of empire and of colonies and of people who are forced out of their home lifestyle by the political powers beyond their control.